meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
If you've been wondering about the Becca McAvoy case, well, wonder no longer. We've been covering it here as much as we possibly can on Scared Monkeys Radio. I've talked about it, daily commentaries. We've done everything that we can to try and get the story out into the press. Sadly, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later, the national press have kind of stayed away from the story, and it baffles me why. But today, there was another court hearing. In regards to this case, of course, you remember Becca McAvoy as the young girl who lost her life in a traffic accident, but was the victim of an alleged rape and sodomy. We're going to start off tonight's show with Aiden McAvoy and Rhonda Wheelis. Aiden, of course, is Becca's dad, and Rhonda is a cousin. Aiden and Rhonda, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, sir.
We had a court ruling today, Aiden, and I want you to share that with the audience for me, please.
Well, once again, we were disappointed. Defense has requested another reset till May 20th. He said he needed more time to go over the doctor's records, which I think is just another stall tactic, which is very disappointing.
Yeah, and stall tactics are something that you and I are familiar with. We've been through the court system lots. I'll get into it a little bit later on with the two district attorneys that I'm going to have on the program, current sex crimes prosecutor Robin Sachs and former sex crimes prosecutor Wendy Murphy will be here. And we're going to talk about the delay process. And I know for a fact that if the DA, if the state was delaying this case for whatever reason, time after time after time, the defense would be crying holy hell, saying these are fair to my client, but we also have to wonder about how fair is it to have delays against the state's case. Rhonda, you and I correspond daily, sometimes three or four times a day. This story is so important, and we've worked on it so hard, and I think it's so important to see and hear and feel the pain from you guys, because it's so important to try and get justice for Becca. Another delay, it must be heartbreaking for your family.
Yes, it is. We just want justice to be served, and we've been through so much, and now just a delay after delay after delay. We need justice so that we can grieve Becca, because ever since all of this, we have just had to fight the process and the system, and it's very heart-wrenching to us.
Yeah. Have you spoken, Aiden, I'm sure you have, and there may be some things that you can't share with us tonight, but have you spoken to the DA's office, the DA in particular? Because I've saw some press reports and some emails that were sent my way, and some concerns, even as much as doing transcription of notes, and all of a sudden it became a cost issue, and all sorts of things that just shouldn't be happening in this case. What is the DA telling you?
Well, right now, he's, I can't understand what he's, the delay is, because it seems like anybody, if they couldn't read something, would ask to have it put where they could read it or made where they could understand it. And both sides said the copies they received were very illegible, and they had trouble even trying to understand it. And being educated lawyers, you would think they would have all this done before it came time for the trial.
Exactly.
But both sides have really been dragging their feet on it. Been kind of disappointed with the prosecution that they hadn't already had everything, all their ducks in a row, waiting on this.
you know, Aiden, when it comes to the prosecution and you being a police officer and having to work with the DA, I'm not sure if you've worked with this particular DA or not before, but you have a certain faith and upholding to the system. You swear an oath as a police officer, but it has to make you wonder a little bit or a lot as far as the system and whether or not it's broken. Your comments.
I'm not going to say it's broken, but it definitely needs some repair and some updates to it, like everything else. If things get older, you have to update them, like your computer.
Yeah.
Things are updated and changed on a daily basis, and our justice system needs to be updated. I agree totally with the, you have the right to face your accuser, but you've got to make exceptions in all the cases for the mentally impaired, very young, and the deceased. I mean, the crime has already taken place. You're just making more room for the perpetrators. Their rights are right there in front of you, and the victims are losing all their rights.
And, you know, we've covered that on past programs, and we'll cover it more tonight. Of course, we're talking about the case Crawford versus Washington, and that is a fundamental right for those accused of a crime to be able to confront their accuser. You and I, and I'm sure everyone believe in that, but there are exceptions, and exceptions have to be made. Rhonda, you've worked tirelessly along with other members of your family, sending out emails, contacting media, making media appearances, although we've tried to do more, and hopefully we'll still be able to do that. Your thoughts as far as what more can be done? I know these delays are heartbreaking, but you know, you have to keep the faith, and your family is a family of faith. I can tell that very easily. I've never met you face-to-face, but we've talked lots on the telephone and through email. How difficult is it for you to keep that faith, Rhonda?
Well, we do get very tired, but we must be diligent, and we must just trust that there is a God in heaven that looks down, and he sees all, and he knows all, and we know that he knows the truth here, and we must trust that the truth will prevail in this, and just hold on to our faith, and trust that he's in control when everything else is out of control. We must know that he's in control and just try and act upon that and do what we can do as a family and send out emails, work diligently and tirelessly to get the word out, contacting media, contacting anybody that will listen to this case, just begging them to please hear this so that Becca can get justice.
If you're just joining us, Aiden McAvoy and Rhonda Wheelis are here. Aiden is Becca McAvoy's dad, and Rhonda, her cousin. You all know the story of Becca McAvoy. It is a tragic story. It's a heart-wrenching story, and it's a story of justice either being served or not. And, you know, Aiden, there's justice is served in many different ways. You as a police officer, and I know that we do our job. We go out and we arrest the perpetrator, the bad person, the criminal, whatever you want to call them, and we take them to the courts, and then the courts get that case and they go with it and they run with it and they make deals and they talk about it and they delay and they do all this sort of stuff, and it makes you wonder. And it must be disheartening sometimes for the investigator to see all these delays, but that's not where I'm going with this. You know, you're a man who has gone through a lot in your life. You're a man that should never have gone through any of what you've gone through, and you are recuperating from this traffic accident. How do you cope day to day? It's got to be about Becca, because we all know she's listening and she's watching right now, but this is all about her right now, and she's putting up one heck of a fight, is she not?
Yes, she is. It's just, I'm having to go to therapy 2 and 3 times a week for my hip replacement. I also suffered Bell's palsy in my face from the airbag. I'm trying to get that straightened out. And nerve damage in my right leg from the surgery. And I just try to concentrate on getting myself back so I can get back to work. And trying to keep up with Teresa and Amarillo, just trying to help me fight this case for Rebecca.
What do you say when, you know, the district attorney calls and says, well, we've delayed it again? And I think it's set over till May sometime now, is it not?
That's reset from May 20th. And like you said earlier, if it was the state putting it off, the defendants would be raising all kind of holy cane about why you delay them, But nothing's ever said when they ask for another reset.
And it will be interesting because that's one of the first questions I'm going to ask my legal team, my two prosecutors, when they're here later on this evening to talk about this. Rhonda, I've seen so many pictures of Becca, a cute, precious young child. You're working on some website stuff, and there's some tributes on YouTube and all that stuff. But the memories of a little child, a young girl like this, the precious memories that you can remember in your mind, too, besides what you see on paper, on video, and on pictures, they must be incredible. Let's talk about Becca a little bit. Rhonda, to me, seeing this young girl, she was just a darling. There's no other way of putting it.
Yes, she was, and everybody's life that she came into contact with, she just lit their life up. And when she would come into a room, she was just a bright, cheery child, and she was just so happy. And, you know, when she would come in, it would light the whole room up. And then after everything happened to her, things began to change. I personally noticed the change because I hadn't seen her in a while, and then when I seen her, I noticed the change in her. But she still, even so, she would still come in and smile and try to, you know, just play with all the other kids, and they would get out there and just have a good time. And we love her so much, and we miss her. And even to this day, you know, as I sit on the computer day in and day out to try to get justice, I have her picture on top of the computer because I get very, very tired. And I just, when I think I can't go anymore, I just look at her picture and I say, okay, Becca, I'll go another hour for you, because I know that this is what you want, that you want justice, because that's what you are fighting for.
And that's so important. Aiden, this is a difficult question, and if you can't answer it, that's okay. I understand. But it's so difficult for a parent or a relative to go through the difficulty and the heartache of an investigation like this, and then to lose your loved one in a mishap makes it 1,000 times worse. But there's other families out here. In fact, there's another case, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, that's going on right in the same area that family asked that we not talk about, but this is happening. Aiden, when you see something like this, and it's always been part of the admiration that I have for victims' families, how they can be so strong and carry on, if you had a message for the other family, for example, that's going through something similar to what you're going through, or another family that may suspect that one of their children is being abused, but they're not sure what to do, or they're not sure what signs to look for, what might that message be to them?
Just watch your children and talk to their friends, because they might not come to you, but they do go to their friends.
Yep.
And just never give up hope, and you got to keep pressing on.
And that's so important, is never giving up hope. You know,
I can't give up hope.
You're both aware of the Natalie Holloway case from, you know, down in your area. And Dave Holloway told me himself that he would move mountains to get answers for his child. And we would all do that. That's the important thing. Rhonda, if you had a message for the media, and I know you do, and I know you've sent it out, and hopefully they're listening to this tonight or later on the podcast, what is that message? How do we get them? Because we've all been working very hard to try and garner that interest. What's that message that you want them to hear?
I just would like for them to realize the significance of this case. It is so significant in the fact that Crawford versus Washington needs to be fixed. It needs to be amended. Testimonial should have not been left up to another day. And it could come down to the fact that this has to go all the way to the Supreme Court, you know, to decide what is testimonial and what is non-testimonial. And that should not have been left up to another day. This case is huge. And I just do not understand why the media hasn't picked up on it any more than they have, because this is a very, very significant case. And, you know, it could decide future cases. Whatever's decided in this case could decide future cases in these type of situations. And I don't understand why they're not picking it up. I would just say, please, please hear our cry and realize the significance of this case and pick it up and show the story so that we can get justice and other families too.
Aiden, just before I let you go, the thing that we don't want to do in the media is to do anything that may jeopardize or harm the investigation or the case. And there's been a lot of talk, some speculation, some reporting about other evidence. Obviously, and tragically, Becca is not here to testify. But, you know, if you could answer, if you're not able to, I understand. And is there other evidence besides the testimony that Becca may have given in a grand jury or whatever?
That I'm not sure of. A lot of, like you said, mainly speculation. The only evidence I know that we have that's hard and fast is the doctor, the DHR workers, and the family down the street that Becca confided in that brought this to a head.
And that's so important. And again, you know, folks, we can't get into the exact facts because that may jeopardize the case if it goes to trial. And we can all hope and pray that it does go to trial. Aiden McAvoy, Rhonda Wheelis, thank you. I will stay in touch. I'm going to be on top of this the best I can. And we'll continue praying and hoping that justice does come to Becca and your family. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for all you've done for us, Dana.
Take care. We'll stay in touch.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, to get a further report, another way of saying what's been going on here, we're going to go to Jessica Taloney. She's a news reporter with WKRG-TV in Mobile, Alabama, here in just a second. You are listening to The Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
It's The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. We're going to go out to Jessica Taloney. She's a news reporter with WKRG-TV in Mobile, Alabama, who has been covering the Becca McAvoy case, and she was at court today. Hi, Jessica. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Dana. Thanks for having me again.
This is a, you know, I think you used a clip from my program where I say that the hair on the back of my neck stands up when I talk about this case. And I wasn't exaggerating because that's the only hair that I have on my head is usually just on the back of my neck. I know you don't even want to think about that, but I think
well, that's true. And that's a sentiment that a lot of people share. That when you hear about the facts of this case and you hear from the family, you can't help but to have your heart go out to them and want to see them get justice. Like I said last time I was on, whatever justice is going to be in this case, you just want them to have some kind of an answer.
It's so important, and the heartbreak and the heartache. And I know as journalists and reporters and talk show hosts, we have to try and stay objective, but gol darn it, it's hard to do in this case.
Mm-hmm. You know, but again, you know, objectivity is sometimes kind of easy, though, because you want, if there's the innocent out there, you want the innocent to go free. But in cases where someone is guilty, you want to see them go to jail. And so what's so troubling, I think, and what we've seen so far is that there's a chance that we may not see either happen. We may not really know whether this is a case of innocence or a case of guilt. And I think that, in this case, is what's troubling.
Absolutely. What happened in court today?
Well, actually, there was not court today because they postponed it. When I talked to the district attorney, the assistant district attorney who's handling this case this morning, because the hearing was supposed to be at 2 o'clock Central Time.
Right.
This morning when I talked to him, he said it had been postponed because the defense attorney representing Bob Engel, his fellow named Michael Harbin, he requested more time to talk with the doctor that examined Rebecca. Now, this is something that was brought up in the April 2nd hearing that I attended, and thought would have been resolved now some 20 days later, thought that all of this with the doctor and the medical report would have all been resolved.
Yes.
But clearly it has not, so this hearing has been postponed until May 20th.
One of the questions I'm going to ask my legal team when they join me a little bit later on this evening is, if this was the prosecution or the DA's office asking for a delay, and then asking for a delay, and then asking for a delay, there would be an abusive process complaint from the defense, and they would say that because of all these delays, the case should be thrown out. What about vice versa? Because the defense keeps asking for delay. Did the DA comment on that at all?
You know, that was one of the first questions I had this morning as well, Dana. I thought, how many times can you delay a case? How many times can you put a family through this? And the assistant district attorney, and of course, you know, he's got to keep such a level head about this, especially when talking to the media,
sure,
really didn't comment on it. He just said that they needed more time. And I can kind of see where he's coming from, too. I'm sure from a prosecution standpoint, you want to dot all your I's and cross all your T's and not give any room for an appeal in the event that they actually do get to proceed with this case, in the event that they actually do get to move on in spite of Crawford versus Washington. And that's the best guess that I have tonight, is that the DA's office thinks, you know what? Give them all the time they need,
yep,
and less chance of an appeal kind of thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're thinking along the same lines here. One last question before I get you go. Again, Jessica Taloney is here. She's been covering the Rebecca McAvoy case. We've talked about it a little bit off air on email about the coverage, the press coverage of this case. Obviously, you guys have been doing a great job. We're trying to do what we can here, but for some strange reason, the national media has, I don't know, stepped aside from it a little bit. It's so important. What's going on, you know, Jessica? Is it because we're, you know, there's an election going on, there's a polygamous cult going on, there's all kinds of stuff? You've had big stories before that have been kind of not ignored, but certainly not looked at the way they should be.
It's true. It's true. You never know how a story is going to play out, whether it's in local media or in national media, and how much attention it's going to get. And sometimes you can sit there and think it really deserves a lot more, and it still not get any of that national play. But I can't explain it. I don't know what it is. Aside from what you just said, there's an election going on. There is the polygamous story that's out there. It's certainly grabbing headlines. I don't know what it is that you know, warrants a story to get the attention or not. And who knows if, you know, a month from now, this one doesn't all of a sudden pop up in the national media and people start paying attention to it. I could see that happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And people need to pay attention to it because it is so important, not only from the human interest aspect, but from the legal aspect, because not only one story is happening, but there's a second story that we haven't been talking about to respect the family's wishes. Can you tell us anything about that?
You know, and I actually don't know a whole lot about that second story that you're talking about because the family isn't ready to talk about it. I talked with that victim's sister, and she said that the mother was ill right now, and whenever she becomes well again, that perhaps she will open up about it and tell that story. But best I understand, it is almost identical to Rebecca's story, which is very strange because the assistant district attorney prosecuting this case said in all of his career he's never seen this happen, and all of a sudden he's watching it happen twice.
Yeah.
But the family, the little girl that was involved, is very close in age to Rebecca. I think they were a year apart, and I believe she was killed in a horseback riding accident in December, whereas Rebecca died in a car crash in January. But very similar case, and that family feels like what happens in Rebecca's case will have a huge impact in what happens in her case. But the district attorney's office has told me that they are separate cases and that what happens in Rebecca's case does not affect her case, but the family feels differently.
Well, you know, keep up the good work covering this story. I think they're back in court on the 20th of May, and I'm sure we'll be in touch at that time. Thanks, Jessica.
No problem. Thanks, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's WKRG reporter Jessica Taloney, who's been covering the Rebecca McEvoy case. We're going to take a quick break here on the Dana Pretzer Show and be back with current sex crimes prosecutor with L.A. County District Attorney's Office, Robin Sachs, and former sex crimes prosecutor, current law professor, author, probably one of the busiest gals around, Wendy Murphy, to follow more up on this case. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, here's your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. We're going to continue on into the investigation regarding the Rebecca McEvoy case, a case that we've covered here now several times on the program. I've done daily commentaries. We've guested on other talk shows talking about this. It's so important. What I thought I would do is bring on my legal team of current and former district attorneys, both who have experience, obviously, in sex crimes prosecutions. They're both children's advocates, victims' advocates. Of course, you know Wendy Murphy and Robin Sachs. Welcome, ladies.
Good to be with you, Dana.
Hi, Dana.
This story, and Robin, you and I have talked about it before. Wendy, you and I have corresponded about this, too, so we all know what's going on here. What you may not know is that it was delayed again today, a defense request saying that they need more time to go through the medical records. What you may not know is I've interviewed the family this evening. Dad says he's getting sick of it. He considers it to be a stall tactic only. A reporter from WKRG in Mobile, who's covering the story, thinks that it's a case where the DA may sit back and say, you know, delay all you want. This is something that's going to work in our corner. I'll start with you, Wendy. What's going on here? This is, I think, four delays in this case. We're going to get into Crawford versus Washington and all that stuff later, but who is the delays benefiting? The prosecution or the defense?
Yeah, you know, let's definitely talk about, and because I have a chapter on this in my book, it's called Victory by Delay. Despite the constitutional promise of a speedy trial, 99.9% of the time the defendant is demanding a delay until, as is sadly true in this case, witnesses die, evidence gets lost, and so forth. So it's almost always advantageous to the accused to delay things. There are exceptions, you know, for a child who isn't capable of testifying and they're getting older as time passes, it can be a strategically good thing. But in this case, I don't see the benefit to the prosecution of any delay. Obviously, the point is to just get the judge to make a ruling. The downside of pushing things too quickly is if the judge is going to make the wrong ruling, you don't want that. And so if the judge just needs more time to fashion the correct ruling and allow hearsay to come in and allow the case to be successfully prosecuted, that's a good thing. If the judge is going to go in the wrong direction, then get to it so that we can have appeals and hopefully reverse that and, you know, get that done quickly. To me, again, just to answer your direct question, victory by delay is an insidious, very difficult systemic problem to redress, usually done intentionally by the defense, not only because of what can happen to the evidence, but to drive victims and their families absolutely crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Robin Sachs, Deputy District Attorney, L.A. County. If this was the DA asking for a delay and another delay, of course the defense would be jumping up and down saying, you know, abusive process, too many delays, speedy trial, all that kind of stuff. Your thoughts?
Well, I absolutely agree with Wendy. I think that the only benefit to aging anything is if you're a winemaker and you age fine wine. Cases just generally don't get better ever for the defense, for the prosecution in time, and only can serve to get better for the defense, unless in the unique circumstance that Wendy laid out. But the thing that what I'm gathering that happened here is that right now there may be a little bit of a perception of some media interest in this, kind of with the gathering and momentum that, thanks to you, Dana, and to Scared Monkeys for taking this on. I believe that maybe what that pressure that may be starting to mount, the defense is hoping to subside in time. And so maybe if there is more exposure to this case, that momentum will continue and will serve to bite the defense in the butt.
Wendy, when I first found out about this case, an email was sent to me, and it said very plainly, and this will hit home for you, it said, Jessica's law is not enough. Of course, we talk with Jessica's law, mandatory minimum sentences, and all of that. And the concern with this is obviously, of course, we know the story is tragic. A young girl, 10 years old, allegedly raped, sodomized, testified twice at a grand jury. The whole medical invasive procedure as far as evidence gathering. And then on the third trip to testify again is killed in a traffic accident. This is heart-wrenching. It's something where we try to do what we can do. You know, the big champions of Jessica's Law, you and Bill O'Reilly, grabbed that story and went with it as hard as you can. And I know you'd love to do something with this story too, but let's talk about that a little bit. What can the media do? How can we help in this? Because not only is there one story, but there's two at the same time, both with both two little girls being killed in different circumstances, but both victims of pedophiles. This is nuts, to lack of a better term.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting to me is, as a moral question, it is simple. No perpetrator should benefit from the untimely death of their victim.
Yep.
Period. No matter who causes the death. And in a moral conversation, this is an easy solution from where I stand. The downside of making the media do what it's been doing, which is to shine this heavy light on the process, is that if it's as a matter of law an unwinnable question, then the media isn't going to change the result. What it might do,
yep,
is shine a light on the nature of the legal dilemma so that people can either fight for legislative reform, get to understand the system better. And in my opinion, as far as Becca McEvoy's case goes, and I think this is something that's purely educational, and again, a lot of this stuff is in my book, if we know that there's a possibility the victim might become unavailable, and that, of course, you can't predict an untimely death, but the things that you can do to preserve their testimony just in case they become unavailable, and let me emphasize something, witnesses become unavailable for all kinds of reasons,
yep,
not just when they die, which is horrible, but when the perpetrator scares the death out of them, so to speak, you know, pays them off. I mean, there are so many ways to render a person, the key witness, unavailable that we should all be disgusted by. This just happens to be an accident that the defendant didn't cause. But most of the time, especially for kids, the defendant causes the victim to become unavailable, usually through torture and intimidation techniques. And I use the word torture probably inappropriately there. But so here's what I teach people. One of the things you can do is understand the law a little bit better so that from the moment the case is reported, especially if you're reporting it against somebody as powerful as an ex-cop or a current cop or a judge or a doctor or a lawyer, somebody who's powerful, if you're reporting against them and you're a kid, one of the things I would do as a parent is preserve the evidence by, number one, going to a medical professional, because if they take a statement from a child and it's in connection with a medical examination, a diagnosis and treatment of the condition of having been sexually hurt, injured medically and legally, if that information is preserved in a medical record, then no matter what happens to the child, whether she doesn't testify or, God forbid, she dies, the medical record exception to the hearsay rule provides clear evidence that can be admitted, and the jury can find somebody guilty based solely on that medical file. A lot of parents don't realize the power of a medical file can be the voice for the child. We need to teach parents about that, and that probably is an aspect of what's going on legally in this case. You know, there are some other things to do, like if they had a pretrial hearing, and I have mixed feelings about this, but if there had been a pretrial hearing in this case, and parents can push for that if they want to be good advocates for their kids. It's not a pleasant thing to go through, but once that pretrial hearing is done, you've preserved evidence in the form of testimony that, because the defendant has a chance to cross-examine it, that can be the voice of the child, too, in the event she becomes unavailable at the time of the real trial. These are just things that the public doesn't understand until it's too late. So we're learning a lot from this case, and that's the good thing. This child's death may well provide a legacy of understanding and reform that could be good for folks across the country.
Absolutely. Well said, Wendy. Robin, just talking to Becca's dad, and he and I both pretty much said at the same time that Becca is fighting this too. She's in a different place, a better place. But like Wendy said, there's going to be some legal rulings or legacy that comes from this case, whether good or bad, indifferent, and the appellate process and all that. But the question I have for you is, as the DA, with a case like this, and questions, you know, I get the emails and some of the speculation that comes to me, and there was questions about the cost of transcribing notes and that the family would have to pay for it because the DA's office couldn't. And you talk about Crawford versus Washington. Well, they don't understand it. A lot of people may think that's a couple of college teams playing, you know, basketball or something. What the hell is Crawford versus Washington? From the perspective of the DA working on this, obviously, you're on the side of the you're on the side of justice, obviously, but you're working how you can with the victim. How do you handle this? Because there's going to be a no-win for you here in a lot of cases. You have to do just the best you can, right?
Well, that's absolutely true. There's a few things, I think. First of all, the law is pretty clear in Crawford versus Washington, and causes some problems in terms of the testimony, and even in the medical records. I agree, Wendy, that a lot of the medical records would provide an avenue for some of the statements. However, if the statements are the victim's own statements and they are found to be testimonial under Crawford versus Washington, even if they are kind of packaged within a medical record, there may be statements that become admissible and others that may not. It would be only those statements that are for the treatment of the medical, and if there wasn't any medical findings, then there would be a problem. I just want to make sure that we are clear that it's not just whatever statements are out there, but only for the medical treatment statements. But one of the things, I come from a jurisdiction where we file generally via complaint, which means that we do preliminary hearings. There's a huge amount of controversy of whether or not preliminary hearings are beneficial for a victim, and if we're subjecting victims to testify on the stand and subjecting them to multiple testimonies. But this would be the perfect example of a case where there would have been a preliminary hearing. If the preliminary hearing happens within 10 days of the filing, now there are often delays, but at least within 2 or 3 months of a filing of the case, there would be a preliminary hearing. And it would be not only a transcript that would obviate the Crawford versus Washington problem, but also would serve to let everyone see the power of the victim's testimony early on, and hopefully encourage the defendant to settle the case and want to plead early on as well.
Yeah, you got to wonder what's going on there. Wendy, your book is And Justice for Some. Justice is served in many different forms. Obviously, the family here wants this alleged pedophile to go to jail for an awful long time, but justice can be served in other ways too. When you see media coverage and you see media looking at cases like this, obviously you don't like to try a case in the media. It shouldn't be tried in the media, but to keep the spotlight on a bad judge, for example, or a bad ruling, or a government official that just doesn't care, that justice can be served in different ways besides a conviction in court, can it not?
Oh, yeah. I wish I didn't have to make this point, but the truth is, I say many times to my clients, justice comes in funny packages, doesn't it? Because they'll communicate with me years later, and for example, they'll say, oh, the guy just got divorced or got arrested, you know, again or whatever. And they feel some sense of justice about the idea that someone who seems to have gotten a discount or got away with something faces future problems in their lives. And they watch and they wait. And, you know, it can be hard because the definition of justice is really an important concept. It may be different for people in some way, but the real core question is, you know, are we hearing about truth? And is it fair? Is the result fair? Truth and fairness really do make up the definition. And in too many of these cases, we're hearing about things that aren't remotely close to the truth because of the way the media isn't always there. And the defensive team in particular has disproportionate power to manipulate the truth. You know, you see a dog and pony show every time. It's a celebrity. And most of what you watch on television about Michael Jackson and Kobe Bryant, oh, it's all nonsense. It's all just complete crap. And, you know, you can't get the media to distort things on behalf of a victim, you know, who's got no money and no power in society. And that drives me a little bit crazy. But the just result as well, you know, the notion that something is fair, we got a long way to go when it comes to crimes against kids, because systematically and for a very long time, children have been perceived to be the property of adults, and so we don't even respect them. They don't even have the same degree of constitutional freedoms that adults have, so they're super powerless in society, and to me that means we have an extra responsibility to do right by them when we can, and I think, on the contrary, our legal system indulges that power disparity and you know, uses it to do really shoddy work when it comes to what fairness means. Let me just say one thing, though, because I really think that if the key to this case is about the price of medical records transcription, and, you know, Robin has been there, I've been there, I got a lot of heat. When I, as a prosecutor, wanted to extradite somebody from another state, I always had to take heat from my boss. Well, we can't afford it. You're going to kill our budget. And I got yelled at. Once a year, we'd have the budget meeting, and they'd yell at me, Wendy, you cost us the most because you extradited all these guys. And I'd say, well, too bad. You know, too bad. I don't care that you think it cost extra. There's no price on this, so too bad. And I'd take the heat. But the point is, they do have to worry about budgetary constraints. If it's true, and I just want to put this out there for public consumption, and I hope Becca's family is listening to this. If it's true that this is a money issue, that they can't transcribe those medical records because it's too expensive and they don't have the money, It Happened to Alexa Foundation, which, by the way, I also talk about in my book, the It Happened to Alexa Foundation, you and I have talked about this before, Dana, and
yes.
I know Robin knows about this wonderful organization, easy to find at ithappentoalexa.org. They give money to victims who need it to travel for the purpose of participating in the criminal justice system. Now, I'm going to make a leap in logic here and say, although Becca can't get travel expenses from heaven, you can get the rough equivalent. In my argument, if I was on the board of this organization, I would make them do this, and I know Stacey Brancini, who runs it, is a fabulous human being who will, I guarantee it, put up the money for this. If you're asking an organization that tends to give out money for purposes of traveling in order to participate in criminal cases, I guarantee you she'll say, this is the same thing. Transcribing the voice of this child for the purpose of facilitating her testimony through her medical records in that criminal case against her rapist, I guarantee you the It Happened to Alexa Foundation will fund that cost if the prosecutor is hanging their hat on the problem of which I've heard described as they can't afford to transcribe the medical records. That's either a bunch of crap or it's legitimate in either case. And too often I think it is crap when the defendant is somebody powerful like a cop. But I don't know the politics of this situation. So let's assume they're acting in good faith and they want to get this guy.
I know from the family that the family has already offered to pay for the medical records.
Well, that makes sense. So the point is, if it's a money issue and the prosecutor's going to say that's why they don't have that evidence, they're either going to have to back down because there'll be gobs of money available from all sorts of public sources, but especially Alexa, the Alexa Foundation, or the prosecutor's going to have to come clean and answer the question, are you really trying to just bag this case to help a cop?
Yeah. And you know, you hate to look at that aspect of it, Robin, but that's an aspect that needs to be looked at. You know, when you're in the position of law enforcement, that position of trust, you swear an oath, but there's that innocent until proven guilty. I'm sure the police department that Robert Engel was with before will never have anything to do with him again. But you start talking about unions and other police departments, and hey, we've talked about bad cops in this program lots and wonder how they got the badge and the gun before Robin. That's something that, you know, we're jumping the gun a little bit here. We're putting the cart before the horse, but that's something that that needs to be looked at, not only in this case, but in other cases with, you know, teachers, police officers, whoever, that get into these positions and then get back into the same position of trust that they had before.
That's exactly correct. And what ends up happening is because it's not a conviction, they don't disclose what's going on, and they jump from agency to agency or school to school, and usually get people from within to vouch for their credibility. I've had a case actually here in Los Angeles where a teacher who was being charged, not yet convicted, left that school, ended up moving up north to San Francisco, applied for a job, asked another teacher to provide the recommendation. The other teacher did, and he is teaching in San Francisco now. So it happens. It happens with, you know, the support of defendant's friends. And, you know, innocent until proven guilty is the standard in terms of the criminal justice system, but it should not be the standard and is not the standard for hiring, you know, anyone who's in any position of trust or anyone who has anything to do with being around kids.
Just before I let you both go, and we have Wendy Murphy and Robin Sachs with us. Wendy, the standard of law where someone has the right to cross-examine their accuser is a good one, and that's something that we need to protect. But what people don't understand that there can be exceptions, and just in the last minute or so here that I have you both on, I'd like you each to comment about that standard and how Crawford versus Washington, and this case with Becca McAvoy, how they all intertwine.
Yeah, it really can be a very complicated doctrine, so let me oversimplify it. what the court said is that hearsay shouldn't be admitted if it's testimonial and if the witness is unavailable and the defendant did not have a prior opportunity to cross-examine. All that mumbo-jumbo means, in a nutshell, is if it's really serious testimony and it's hearsay and the witness is not around to be challenged so that cross-examination can help to elucidate the weight of that testimony, then it's just not fair to send somebody off to prison by introducing a statement that no one can test the credibility of in a courtroom. Now, the reason that's a good idea is obvious. The reason it's a silly idea to over rely on it is because there are tons of exceptions. As you said, Dana, we have hearsay upon hearsay exceptions upon hearsay exceptions, and it's the fact that we have so many exceptions that makes people like Robin and I say, well, for God's sake, if you're going to have an exception for that, you should have an exception for this, because then it becomes a moral question.
Yep.
Why is that exception more valuable than this exception? And what I mean by this exception is, why not have an exception that lets the child's past statements come in as long as they're reliable? If in the event the child dies, that just seems fair. And isn't the real issue just whether the information is reliable enough to be admitted in a court of law? Let the jury figure out whether they want to reject it because it hasn't been tested through cross-examination. I particularly think it's political, the ultimate hierarchy of hearsay exceptions and why there's nothing really good out there for kids. Because, for example, the medical records hearsay exception that Robin and I have been talking about, if it exists at all, a lot of folks would say, well, it exists because we don't want doctors to have to give up their time in the hospital or earning money or whatever it is. We don't want them to have to come into court and spend 6 hours waiting to testify. So we're going to create an exception, in a sense, to make it easy on medical professionals that they don't have to traipse over to court every time an issue comes up. And lots of things that are medical also become legal quandaries. So, you know, we recognize this. We give them this big, fat exception. Well, if we can put a big, fat exception in place for all statements that relate to diagnosis and treatment, whether or not they're reliable, and that's an important point here. Medical statements that are given to medical professionals for diagnosis and treatment, whether or not they are reliable, are admitted in court every day in every state across the country, and it's constitutional. If we can have that sort of huge exception, notwithstanding Crawford, then we can have a damn small exception for cases like this where the child dies and the statements she's given are very, very trustworthy.
Yeah, well said. Robin, I've got about 30 seconds left here. You're going to sit down and have a conference with the family or a family tomorrow. Your advice to them or your comments to them would be, obviously, you know, be patient. Hopefully something will work out. But there's got to be a little bit more to that.
There is. I mean, clearly we want, you know, them to realize that the system, though it is imperfect, and there are a lot of problems with that, there are support from many, many other sources and many other people, and justice will come, and they're doing an amazing job of enlightening, you know, the community and society about the laws and what goes on through the process, and it's only because of this that hopefully legislation and exceptions will be made. And they are healing, and I'm sure that Becca is looking at them awfully proud.
Absolutely. Ladies, thank you, and I'll stay in touch with you because I'd like to do more programs on this topic.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dana.
Take care.
Bye, Robin.
Bye, Wendy. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, that's my two DAs, a current one and a former one, and they both know what they're talking about, and all we can hope is that justice is served the proper way in this case. I've got about 5 minutes left. I thought I'd open up the phone lines. 1-306-842-7884. 1-306-842-7884. And what I guarantee you is that my show, the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio, and I know Red and all the people at Scared Monkeys will cover this story until we see a conclusion that benefits everyone, because we're all about victims. We're all about victims' rights and getting justice for Becca McAvoy and her family. Because, again, justice is served in different ways, and let's hope, what have I got written down here, May 20th will bring one step towards that justice, because this is just, again, I get tongue-tied seldom, but in this case I do get tongue-tied, because even though it sounded weird, it does make the hair on the back of my neck stand up, because it's just that important of a case, something that we need to talk about. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Dana, it's Red. How are you this evening?
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Oh, boy, after listening to this show, it really just makes you scratch your head, Dana.
Well, we've been working, you, me, everyone involved, the family, the two ladies that we had on, Jessica Taloney, the news reporter. We've been working our tails off to get this story out there. It is so hugely important, and, you know, we see justice in many ways, but, you know, I dare anyone. And again, we're supposed to be objective here, but I dare anyone to take a picture or take a look at the picture of that little girl, Becca McAvoy, and see the innocence in her face and see how that innocence was taken away from her, that you wouldn't want to fight for this case too.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, Dana. I mean, and I do have to say that Wendy Murphy and Robin Sachs, two of my most favorite guests
yep.
that you ever have on yeah. the show. I mean, it is actually a pleasure to listen to DAs who are lawyers rather than the defense side. They hit so many of the topics. I just nailed them. One being, how on earth does a person benefit from someone's death? The tragedy that she was on her way to testify
yep.
makes it even worse, because you know, just, I mean, through the chain rules of law, that she never would have been in that place, in that car, at that time, if it wasn't for this situation, that she was going to that courthouse to testify. And it just, there isn't one aspect of this case that doesn't just make your blood boil.
Yep.
And, I mean, I you know, have gotten the emails from the family. Then, I mean, the very first one that came across my computer, I was just like, oh my.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are cases, I mean, we deal with so many of these types of cases, but then there are others that just stand out and just, you just don't know what to say. I know yourself, the media is probably sick of hearing from me. and I'm a little disgusted at that, more so than the normal, you know, more so than usual, Dana. You know, God forbid the blogger on the internet be disgusted with the media. It is sad.
Well, there's a huge aspect here, not only human interest, but the fact that there's two cases like this going on that we know about, that the whole pedophilia aspect of it, the whole court aspect of it, it's just crazy. And I'm going to pat our backs here a little bit. I think we've been doing a damn good job covering it, and we'll keep covering it the best we can. But I'm noticing something in you that I don't notice often either, or me. We're getting tongue-tied a little bit by this here story, because we're just blown away by it.
Well, you know, I don't want people to see the non-tough side of Red. but I mean, it is sometimes, I don't know about you, you have to actually speak when you're doing this, so we can kind of hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
When I'm typing behind a keyboard, it is difficult not to get choked up when you are writing about a story like this, and then you think it can't get worse, and then you hear something else. But I would like to, I mean, I really have to say to the family, though, that do not look at this delay as a bad thing.
Yep.
turn it into a positive. We will get this out there. We will guilt the media into covering this story. I mean, there is no reason. And I don't even pretend anymore that the media cares about human interest, because they don't. I've given up on that angle, because I've heard from too many producers after following the Natalie Holloway story that they're looking for the next Natalie Holloway story.
Yeah.
And that's what separates, Dana, you and me, and caring people like Robin Sachs, like Wendy Murphy. That causes this family to just reach out to everybody and anybody who can possibly help them, is we're doing it for the right reason. We're not doing it because somehow it makes us feel better about ourselves, or in the media's case, ratings.
Yeah.
And the sick part about it is, if the media had half a clue, if the producers would, pardon my French, get off their dead asses and do their job and actually, you know, I don't even care if they plagiarize what we've said and what we've written on the internet. Just do the story. I don't want to have to see this story being done after a tragedy of justice was done, where Becca was, where the judge decided in a different way because no one was there to put any pressure on him up front. I do not care to see Bill O'Reilly's producer chasing down some judge saying, why did he rule in the way that he did in the Becca case?
Yep. No, absolutely.
They could do it right now.
Yep.
They could put the full court press on. They could do the right thing. And guess what, media? In the process, you'd get ratings. Because this is a compelling story, it is those stories that we have out there that are perfect storms. You have an innocent child, you have a villain, you have legal precedent. Please tell me why Greta Van Susteren isn't covering this case and just going off on Crawford versus Washington with her legal panel. Explain that one to me, Dana.
Yeah. Well, she knows about it. I've talked to her assistant personally, I have. And, you know, we'll just keep fighting. But anyway, Red, I'm going to let you go. I know we're both batting on the same team for this one. And, you know, we're doing this for Becca and her family. Thank you, sir.
And I would just like to say God bless Becca. God bless her family for fighting the fight.
You bet. And we'll be there for it. Thank you, sir.
Bye, Dana.
Bye-bye. That, you know, that's, I think Red just said it perfectly right at the end. Becca, you know, we're doing this for you. We're doing this for you and for your family, and we will see justice. Justice is served in many different forms, and I want to be there while it happens and make sure that it happens the right way. We'll continue here on Scared Monkeys Radio covering this story the best way that we can. We'll bring on the industry guests and we'll cover other stories and do other shows, of course. And, you know, come closer to May 20th, we'll cover this again and we'll talk about it before that. But it's so important that we keep it alive. You know, Natalie Holloway, this story. Jennifer Kessie, I can go on and on and on. Anyway, thank you to my guests this evening. I appreciate you, the listener, spending time with us. Of course, this show is available for podcast at scaredmonkeysradio.com a little bit later on in the evening if you are listening live. Thank you. And again, Becca, this show has been for you. We'll see you again real soon here on the Dana Pretzer Show. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.